Michael Pina of The Ringer joins me to talk about Devin Booker becoming the best point guard in the NBA, Chet Holmgren as Godzilla, and Jimmy Butler, certified good hang. All that and more coming up right now on this episode of Divine Intervention. All I know is that I don't know. All I know is that I don't know nothing, and that's fine. John Gennaro, count me in! Today's first words belong to Operation Ivy from the song Knowledge off the 1989 LP Energy, but the rest of them belong to me. Welcome to Divine Intervention, a self-help podcast about basketball. My name is Dan Devine, and before we get rolling, here are three things that I am grateful for today. Number one, I get paid by Yahoo Sports to write about the NBA and talk about it into this microphone and into this camera. Pretty sweet deal. Number two, accidental hand-me-down come-ups. I forgot my winter jacket at my brother's house on Thanksgiving. I was pretty bummed out because it's like a two-hour drive to get to where he was, only to find out that my in-laws, where we were staying, had a dope wool pea coat that hadn't been taken out of the closet in ages and fit me. So now I have that pea coat, which is pretty great. And I don't have to go take that two-hour drive to get my other coat. And then come Christmas, two coats for me. Pretty good stuff. And number three, more important than all that, I get to spend part of my morning talking to one of my favorite basketball writers in the world. Here's a little bit of inside baseball. When I left The Ringer to come back to Yahoo Sports last year, I had a brief moment of egotism. And I thought to myself, like, I'd like to see how they replace me. And how they did it was that they hired somebody younger and cooler who dresses better and is more prolific, which absolutely kicked my happy male ass down the street and was a good, humbling experience. My guest today is that person. He's a fantastic writer whose coverage I have been following since he was posting it independently on WordPress. Shout out to Shaky Ankles. He has written for GQ, the New York Times, 538, and Slam, among other publications. He was a staff writer at Sports Illustrated, and now, yes, he is a senior staff writer at TheRinger.com, which remains a good website. Friends, a warm welcome for Michael Pina. Michael, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm blown away by the introduction. I don't know about best dressed now that you've got two pea coats, so might have to edit that one out, but thank you so much. This is a pleasure. I'm so excited.
All right. I'm excited to have you here too, and as we do on Divine Intervention, we always like to operate from a place of joy at the start of every episode. So what is something from the world of basketball that has brought you, Michael Pina, joy this week?
Okay, so I don't know how, if this is too niche, if this is too specific, if this
it's
falls in line.
It's all cool. It's all
awesome,
right here.
Cool, all accepted. Okay, yes. So even though he just won Player of the Week, I am brought a lot of joy by Devin Booker becoming the best point guard in the NBA.
Let's just do it now because this is literally something I had on here for later. So let's do it. All right. What in specific about that brings you a great deal of joy?
He is obviously this guy who entered the league, a prodigious scorer, dropped 70 in a game before his 21st birthday, a game I was at in Boston, actually. I'll never forget that one. And has this reputation for just getting buckets, three levels, can shoot threes, pull up mid-range, get to the free throw line, all that sort of stuff. And for someone at age 27, obviously he could pass before the Chris Paul trade brought him to Phoenix, and kind of Chris Paul was running the show, obviously, had the ball in his hands a ton. Devin Booker could pass always, but like 8.9 assists. He has the second highest assist rate in the entire NBA behind Tyrese Allen, like a higher assist rate than Nikola Jokic. And if you just watch him play, he's willing. He is just reading the defense. He's just he's getting off the ball a beat quicker than other guys who are averaging 30 or near 30 points per game would be willing to. And he's not playing with this selfishness. So I think just like at this stage in his career, the willingness to evolve, the willingness to assume more of a playmaker role while, you know, Bradley Beal, obviously, he hasn't played a minute or a second with Bradley Beal as his teammate. Kevin Durant's been out of the lineup the last couple of games. And, like, they have just, like, the best offense in the league when he's on the court. And it's just all him. And it's just cool to see, like, that evolution at this stage in his career when at 27, he should be like, I want to shoot every single time I touch the ball. And he's just like all about making the right play right now. And it's just, it's awesome to see.
And a great reminder that even players we've been watching for nearly a decade now are not finished products, right? I mean, now he's obviously a special version of that, like an all NBA first team caliber player, an MVP candidate caliber player. But these guys can add to their games and they can do it at the highest levels. They can do it without taking other things off the table. The thing that blew my mind when I was looking at very similar things was that in addition to that gigantic leap in assist rate, you know, I think it was like 27.3% last year up to like 47.7.
Yep.
The turnover rate barely nudged. Like he's, I've unlocked this other part of my game, but I have not taken anything away in terms of my ball security, in terms of the way that like you can always feel good that we're going to get a good look, whether it was me taking it or now me creating it. And to be able to do that while still operating at an obscenely high level in terms of his scoring efficiency, the volume of shots that he's still taking and creating himself, then to just all of a sudden be like, oh, by the way, I'm third in the league in assist points per game, and I create more threes per 100 possessions than Tyrese Halliburton. Like, that's absurd. And I think a wonderful source of joy. I have a little bit of trepidation in my heart because this makes me think that you're writing this and I am also possibly writing something about this. Yeah. So I have a little bit of less than joy in my heart, but that's okay. There's more room for good things in the world and we can share them together. All right. That's very cool. That's a great source of joy for this week. But I've brought you here today, Michael, not only to speak about sources of joy. Last week with the great Katie Heindel, we discussed emotional truths that this NBA season has revealed to us. And today I've brought you here for Journey into Mystery. I'd like to talk with you about things that are still baffling to us 5 weeks into the season, the kind of stuff that we don't fully understand, but it's absolutely still happening. So call us a couple of Sarah McLachlans, because fellas, it's time to start building a mystery. Michael, what is something? I'm gonna let you like that. I'm going to let you enjoy that. Our viewers on YouTube will see that you enjoyed that joke. Michael, what is something that's been happening in the early part of the season that is spraining your brain?
The Cleveland Cavaliers having a negative point differential. I don't know. Like, why isn't this team better? And I kind of have some hot takes about them that I just want to, I guess, I'll share them because we're on a podcast and this is what we do. We talk about what we're thinking.
Absolutely.
I feel like, you know, they've lost some pretty terrible games. They've won really impressive. I've had some really impressive wins. And I just think that, like, I enjoy watching this team more when their best player isn't playing. Like, I don't know if they're better, and the numbers say that they're definitely not better without Donovan Mitchell. They recently won 3 of the 4 games when he sat. And aesthetically, I just love watching like Evan Mobley's offensive game expand. I love the two-man game he has with Max Strus. I love when he grabs and goes. I wrote a big story about him last year and I'm obsessed with him still. And I feel like Darius Garland is just like continuing to rise and ascend in so many fun ways. And particularly in crunch time when Donovan Mitchell is in the game, he just takes so many just like gross shots that just aren't what you want. And a lot of the times they go in because he's amazing. And he's one of the best offensive players in the league and probably should have been first team All-NBA last season. But this isn't even like about the trade rumors that are like, you know, pending or looming, or maybe they've already arrived. It's just about how this team is constructed now. And I think back sometimes, I have conversations with people for fun about the Donovan Mitchell trade, which I didn't like the day it happened. And you look at like Lauri Markkanen and what he's become in Utah, and you're just like, man, like Lauri Markkanen on this team would be so much fun. Like, having a big who can space like that, who doesn't need the ball next to these other two bigs with Garland. And then you can like add the, you know, the Strus or the Niang or whoever you want to add even more 3-point shooting and more space and gravity. Like, I don't know why they're not as good as they were last year or even like close to that right now. And like their starting five with Strus, which should be really awesome, has been terrible. And I don't know. That's just what I'm, every time I watch them play, I'm like, why are you losing right now? And like, shout out to like Craig Porter, who's just like amazing, like my favorite player in the NBA, but like, he's not the answer really. So I don't know. It's, they're a team that I watch and I'm kind of baffled by, and I get frustrated. Sometimes when they're in crunch time with Donovan Mitchell, and I think he's an excellent player, obviously, but the way the ball moves, the way their offense kind of flows when he's not in the game, I'm in love with that. And I would love to see that grow. And we have more patience with that version or that iteration of the Cleveland Cavaliers than this one that's like, hey, we're kind of knocking on the door of being a contender, but like, we're also super young. And as we saw in the playoffs last year, we get to these games and like with the light shining extremely bright, and we fold because none of us have even been here before. And this is like a baby step process in the NBA of becoming the contender. And it doesn't just happen overnight with a trade like this. So they have a lot of pressure. They have like a lot of great goals. Their coach is under, he's not on the hot seat right now, I would say, but you know, he's on the short list, I would say. Sure. And so the Cavs, man, like, what's going on, I guess, is what I want to talk about.
No, there's a ton there. I think there's a few different things. Oh, obviously one major component, and I would imagine for a bunch of teams that have been off to sort of fits and starts openings of the season, injuries are a huge part of it. And they've had sort of staggered at different times, like, Jared Allen out at the beginning of the season, and then Garland's out and Mitchell's out, and so that starting lineup that you talked about, the opening night starting lineup, or the expected starting lineup they were going to have, has only played like 84 minutes in seven games. Yeah. So they haven't had a ton of time together. You would like the returns to be better than what they've had so far, but there is that feeling of like, last season was Mitchell and Garland learning how to iron out the your turn, my turn kinks somewhat. It's not a fully integrated sort of project. And that's part of why you go out and you get Strus and you go out and you get Niang, so that there's no more excuses offensively. There's going to be space. There's going to be shooting room for those guys to operate, partners for them to play with in different two-man games, different actions. And we just haven't gotten to see all that sort of combine. To your point about Darius Garland continuing to ascend, personally, as I have someone with a vested interest, I would really love to see Darius Garland extend for like five or six straight games, maybe heading into a national TV game, because there may or may not be a story that's been waiting to go for a little bit, and injuries have interrupted that. But yes, it's also instructive and perhaps instructive that they found that rhythm a little bit more, as you said, when it was Mitchell's out, things are streamlined. We kind of know. Everyone has another full year of knowing what those reads are, knowing what the rhythm is, knowing what the chemistry is. And so that's your trick. That's the trick of how do you graft on a top, 5, 10, whatever offensive player in the league to this existing framework and then build upon it. They made significant strides last year. They've had stumbling blocks at the beginning of this year. And that's a thing where that feel like the underlying numbers, if you adjust for strength of schedule, say like that might be a top six or seven team in the league, but the right. record hasn't reflected that, and some of the late game performance hasn't. So yeah, when do those two things meet? And are they maybe a little bit further behind the eight ball in the East than they would have liked to have been by the time they actually do?
Yeah, I could be, a little too harsh on them right now. They're 9-8. Defense is okay overall. And when you just look at like the numbers with Mobley and Allen's played really well since when he's healthy enough to play. And they do the funky zone. They put Mobley at the top. They did that. They've been doing that a little bit. I'd mm-hmm. like to see a little bit more of that, because it's really fun and really scary.
That's the thing where JB Bickerstaff like opens up his chest like he's Superman, right? Like Clark Kent pulling up. I feel like I remember that. Maybe that was our friend Rob Mahoney, your coworker Rob Mahoney, wrote about that once, where that was like the signal for it. We're going to go zone, and it's Mobley taking off his Clark Kent suit to be Superman, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, but like the offense has just been really, I don't know. It's like a kind of a clunky, I don't know. Like the way Mitchell just kind of, I don't want a ton of pick and roll. I don't want, I'm not going to say like Donovan Mitchell kind of like stands around when he doesn't have the ball, like a Trae Young, because mm-hmm. he does do some stuff, but I would just like more activity, inverted screens, more off ball stuff with him. And just like, I just think like the I think I wrote this earlier. I can't remember if I did or if I just said it out loud to myself. But like, I want to see the... I think Mobley can be like Bam Adebayo in a lot of ways offensively. And I don't think that him spacing in the corner is like a really good way to use him. And they've started to have him corner crash a ton on those four on... Like, they'll set the ball screen with Allen and he'll have the 4-on-3 when Mitchell or Garland gets blitzed.
And then just cutting in behind the play.
Correct. And just hit him with the lob. I don't really want him to space, and I don't think he needs to be a three-point shooter to have like a really awesome offensive display every single night. Like, or the ways that he can contribute are just like they can manifest in different ways. Like Bam, like him running, he's such a really talented passer, and him running and initiating DHOs with Strus or Garland with space is just like, it's unstoppable offense. And I think we just would love to see I don't know who we is.
You're the royal we. I'm okay with you being the royal we on this show.
Would love to see more of it. And I don't know why I'm anti Donovan Mitchell, because I like a lot of what he does. The like football, like swim move in transition is like one of the greatest things on a basketball court. Totally unstoppable. But I don't know. There's just something about the pieces here where last year it all kind of came together immediately. And, you know, they finished with the best defense and they're like second in net rating or something like that. And it was just very ahead of schedule. And maybe they do get it. Maybe you're right. And it's just all the hiccups that they've had with guys being in and out of the lineup. And that's perfectly understandable. And we're only a month into the season or whatever. And incorporating new pieces like Strus and also like kind of altering how they even want to play on offense in a lot of ways from last season and how they collapsed in the playoffs. Like that takes time. That takes reps and minutes together and new different streams of chemistry need to be built. But I don't know. I just thought they'd be better. I thought that offensively it would look nicer. And when I see it look really great and awesome, like, that win against the Sixers that they had, that was just like really impressive, even though they had some really ugly turnovers in it. Yeah, I just want to see it more consistently. And I'm just kind of wondering why it's not there given the talent level.
Yeah, from a team that feels a little bit like it's not yet more than the sum of its parts to, for me, one of the bigger mysteries or one of the things that I'm really wrangling with is a part that seems like he's perfectly fit into where he goes and is making everything more than that sum. Is Chet Holmgren like already an all NBA player? Like, did he just walk into the league as like a top 20 guy? Here are some numbers that feel sick. He's 15th in the league in value over replacement player. He's 10th in box plus minus and win shares per 48 minutes. In Taylor Snar's estimated plus minus, he is 5th in the entire NBA. He's averaging 18.1 points, 8 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and 2.3 blocks per game. His shooting slash line is 56, 44, 88. If he's like, now granted, advanced statistics, you've got, you know, that it's worth considering all of them in their context and the grain of salt. His 3-point shooting, he probably won't keep shooting 45% from 3 on decent volume because that would be insane. But if this is who he is, and he's already like a plus rim protector and a plus stretch 5, who can put the ball on the deck and drive to the basket and collapse a defense and make a play out of it, and he is taking nothing off the table right now, then like, are the Thunder set? Like is he, I know that there, you know, you talked about the Cavs being a team that kind of, it's like they got there ahead of schedule. Are the Thunder just there? If this is who Chet Holmgren is, are the Thunder just there?
You know, I wrote in July this column about how I thought that the Thunder were going to be really awesome and it would be really interesting to see if Presti was going to be forced to make the trade. Like the, we need to get better short-term trade where he swaps picks or maybe even consolidates with one of the young guys mid-season because they could win the title like right now. Like they it seemed to me like they could have been, and maybe they are, like what the Grizzlies were pre-drama, where they're super young. Like, where they were, like that team had like no one on it who was older than, I mean, Steven Adams and Kyle Anderson were like the two vets on that team. and they won like 50 something games and went to the second round of the playoffs. And it just like would, could they be good enough to have Presti's hand forced? And in it, I wrote about like, I didn't know anything really about Chet Holmgren. So I was just like, yeah, they were really small last season. They were like really plucky and they did all the right things and they played ahead of their years, but they were just so small and they didn't have any rim protection and they didn't have like a rim running big. And so, yeah, you just slide Chet Holmgren in there and that should be really nice. And I was just like, oh, wait, he's like a borderline all-star right now.
Yeah, it's not nice. It's like you put Godzilla in there or something yeah, like that. It's yes. like, oh, whoa, this is an entirely different thing than I thought. Like, I saw a like a round hole and figured a round peg would go in there. But what if that round peg also like shot fire out of it and could like just reach out and grab people and throw them through a wall? It's like, this is ridiculous to see him have this impact right away. And I know... First year, I mean, he had the red shirt rookie year, right? And we've seen guys come in after that and have major impacts. Ben Simmons before him, Joel Embiid before him. This has happened with guys before. But for it to be this smooth, this quick, and for the entire structure to look this ready to go and elevate all the pieces around, it creates more driving lanes for Jalen Williams. It opens, you know, opens things up more and forces defenses to pay more attention. Then suddenly, you know, your Isaiah Joes and everybody else is walking into like practice shots. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, by the way, and I am guilty of this. I wrote about this a little bit today in our like in-season tournament table setter post that I wrote this morning. Like in all the focus on Chet, understandably, and here I am doing it again. It's like, oh, by the way, SGA was first team all NBA and finished fifth in MVP voting, and he's better now. And like maybe way better, and is doing like the list of guys with the stat line that he's got right now. I'm gonna pull this up because it's sick and we should do it again. Is he's over 36-6 on 600 true shooting. The guys who have done that before in a season: Jordan, Harden, Steph, Giannis, LeBron, and KD. And And he's doing that and leading the league in steals on a team that, again, like there are holes to poke. Youth is one of them. Youth is hardly ever served in the playoffs. Chet's shooting will come down. They're obviously going to have to navigate the discomfort of the Josh Giddey situation as the NBA launches an investigation to allegations that he had inappropriate interactions with a minor. There's a lot that they're going to have to solve and figure out on the fly. But this looks like it's not like, oh, a cute story. It's like, this is a war machine now. And Chet being this right away seems to make it that way.
To be honest with you, like, there was the origin story explosion against the Warriors where he hits that shot. And, you know, it's... That was like one of the most incredible shots I've ever seen. I'm not even gonna lie. Like, how? Just right. Even watching the replay. But like, that was really cool, amazing. But like, I don't know if you watched the next night, in Portland, they like just blow the doors off the Blazers, a team that beat the Indiana Pacers last night, and is actually like low key trying to win games. Like they were one of like I could talk about them too. I don't understand what's happening, but like Holmgren and
they're competitive when they have bodies. Like when Brogdon's in the game, when Jeremy Grant's out there, when Ayton's playing, like they've actually got legit NBA bodies and they play hard.
But like Holmgren basically just like pitched a perfect game in the 15 minutes, 20 minutes he actually played before it was out of control and he didn't need to participate anymore. And Portland had like no idea what was even happening. It's like they never saw tape of Chet Holmgren. Like the game begins with like a pick and pop three and he's wide open. And I'm just like,
and
what
are you
doing?
You could area scout. He was right up there at Gonzaga.
Exactly. So that was like, oh my God, like this dude is such a problem to have them like to be mentally prepared to come into that game in that environment. It's not easy to go into Portland and win a second night of a back to back.
Right.
Feeling on top of the world. Everyone's talking about you after you down the Warriors with like, what do you have, 36 in that game plus the game winner? And to just come out and with the ferocity that he had the next night, I thought was just like, I was so impressed. I know they lost to the Sixers the other day and they had to sub in Jalen Williams like almost immediately for Cason Wallace because Chet Holmgren was not about to guard Joel Embiid.
Right.
But like that's really the only thing that's really the only drawback that I see right now with his game, right? Like in this context is like if you're playing last year's MVP who's like Shaq with a 3-point shot,
right?
Like he can't really guard him right now because he's not strong enough. But it's just like you're 12 games into your career, whatever it is, like who cares?
And right.
I think offensively, you even saw it with the, they had this blowout loss against the Nuggets earlier in the season. And it was like, Holmgren couldn't guard Jokic, of course, but sure. Then he was also spacing out and making Jokic guard on the perimeter in ways that made Nikola very uncomfortable. And that's not something he really wants to do. And so I just feel like there's this mismatch thing where even if you can't attack him, he'll always have something to counter you with as a big. And yeah, man, the Thunder are so, they're so exciting. And like Isaiah Joe might be like my, you wanted to talk about like joy at the top. Like he's actually, he was on my notes as someone I wanted to talk about. Like,
well, I'm glad Isaiah, we got there.
Isaiah Joe slip screens are just like my, oh man, like just cue me, get like a highlight reel for me for Christmas and just put it up, put it on YouTube. Send me the link, please. Like he's amazing. He's hitting like all of his shots. Like every time he lets go of the ball, it's like almost like a Klay Thompson level of expectancy for me personally. When I'm watching, I'm just like, this is going in. It's going in. I love him.
All right. So my next mystery is going to be how you got to Isaiah Joe is giving me Klay Thompson levels of expecting that I'm going to see a make shot. But we'll move off of that. And I want to hear your next mystery.
My next mystery. Why isn't Anthony Davis more dominant? I'm just putting on my Charles Barkley hat.
That's
right
all
now.
Right. We can cross that one off my list too. All right.
I mean, I'm watching the first 5 minutes of last night's game against the Sixers, which they got absolutely shellacked. But
yeah. Davis, oh, you mean the competitive portion of that game?
Yeah. Like the first 5 minutes. Yes. And Davis was, I was just like, he's just like going at Embiid. He's doing everything. He started with the mid range pull up. I think Embiid dared him to take a catch and shoot, like 18 footer. He drilled it, drove by, pump and go, passed Embiid, finished at the rim. Obviously made some fantastic defensive plays at the basket. And I'm just like in my notes, I was like, what happened to like, why in my head do I never think that this guy is even close to the level of Embiid or Jokic, or even like what really kind of bugged me out or like bothered me was like, when I think about the third best center, my mind always goes to Bam Sabonis. I don't even go to Anthony Davis. And that's like, that's wrong. Like, I think that's objectively wrong, or maybe not objectively, but I should definitely have him in this category. The fact that he's just completely fallen off the map as an MVP candidate after they won the title, when it was just like, oh, this is Anthony Davis's league now. And like before the season started, like Darvin Ham is like, yeah, I want him to shoot 6 threes a game. Was he averaging 0.6? Are you kidding?
Right.
Like, what is happening? So the on-offs are like not very good at all. I know he's in lineups that are really funky and they have a lot of guys out that would help him. Gabe Vincent, a two-man game with him would be really nice. But just like, man, like you should be, why aren't you dominant? Like I don't want to be Charles Barkley or Shaq or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but just looking at this, like analytically, I see like what is happening? Why? Like, I am baffled by like where he's at in his career right now, and he's healthy. So I don't get it. I really don't.
Yeah. I think my version of this was like with the case of the disappearing jump shot, you know, like where did that go? And I was going to do a whole bunch of fancy research on it, but then our friend Tom Haberstroh did it at the Finder. So now I don't have to, I can just credit him. He hasn't taken a three in five games. He hasn't made a three since October 29th, which is a month tomorrow. He's taken fewer than two shots per game from beyond 16 feet, and his effective field goal percentage on them is like 26%. So this is a complete deterioration of what seemed like the crowning
aspect of his game that he showed in the bubble. Like, shots 50% from mid-range, 39% from three. And it was like, well, geez, like, what do you do with him if that's the case? If you have to get out on him, he can get by you with the pump and go. If you leave him alone, he's going to dice you up. If you can't deal with him on the block, you can't deal with him as a role man. I wrote a whole big thing last year about, like, him playing some of his best ball of his career by accepting, like, I can't pop, I've got a role. But then also, why can't you pop? Like, what happened there? And, like, it's not just that there was an empty gym and great sight lines, because, yes, he's never been that good shooting before, but he was all right and he was willing before. And now, I don't know if that's a between the ears thing or a lineup construction thing or what, but to get the benefit of him at the five, or the maximum benefit of him at the five, it requires space, him to create, and him to be able to do things with the space that is created. And he does that well enough. I mean, he's still, you know, one of the better players in the league. He's still a highly efficient offensive player. But if you remove that, you know, weapon from the arsenal, and then you're also playing lineups where there are multiple non-shooters or multiple shaky shooters or guys that defenses can play off, all of that continues to make it so much harder for a half-court offense that really hasn't been good since LeBron got there. Like, it is the anomaly in LeBron's career that it's several years in a row of bad half-court offense. And I think a big part of that is, like, if you expected Anthony Davis to be able to be your unicorn, stretch the floor, do everything, like, the kind of guy we're seeing Chet be, but, like, the, you know, I don't know, Mecha Godzilla version of that or whatever, he has been that. He can be that, but he isn't that anymore. And I think that, or at least he's not that consistently with any kind of bankable efficiency and acceptable, like, effort that you're getting on a night-to-night basis in that specific realm. You're still getting great defense. You're still getting the high efficiency finishing inside, all that kind of stuff. But that's the kind of stuff, like, Jokic and Embiid impose their will on the game because wherever they are on the floor, you have to account for them and be scared of them. And Anthony Davis, that hasn't been true further out in a while.
You would think also just he clearly is constantly concerned about his health and has talked about his body as the reason why he signed long-term contracts, as opposed to kind of maximizing the earnings that he could have otherwise had throughout his career. But it's just like, if you would think, like, if that is your mentality, that playing a little bit more on the perimeter would do you good and
to save you some of that banging, right?
Exactly. Be it the pick and pop three or the, like, LaMarcus Aldridge baseline turnaround, which no one should be able to block, or whatever it is. And we're not really seeing that. And I do think that the construction of the Lakers roster hasn't helped him, for sure. Like, letting go, you know, going back to just, like, the pre-Russell Westbrook trade where, I mean, like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is just such a winner who's just, like, compliments big men so well on offense and on defense, too. And just, like, letting him go just, like, it was kind of crippling. Alex Caruso is just, like, an amazing complimentary piece as well.
Right.
Not for the three-point shooting, just for other stuff. And that hurts. And, you know, but, like, at the end of the day, like, this is supposed to be a generational talent. And right now they're outscored when he's on the court. Like, I know Jackson Hayes sucks. Like, I know, like, and you're playing with him sometimes. Like, I get it. You're playing these weird, like, he's shared the court with, like, Christian Wood and Rui Hachimura at the same time. Like, that's bizarre stuff.
Darvin Ham really searching for, you know, something bankable.
Right. And but it's just like the average distance of his shots is like 6.7 feet, which is the closest it's ever been in his entire career right now. Like, I don't know. And you brought up Chet Holmgren. I got a hot take question for you. Yeah. When is Chet Holmgren going to be better than Anthony Davis? Is it going to happen within the next 2 years?
It wouldn't shock me if they kind of met.
Dan, has it already happened?
I would say no, it hasn't already happened yet, because I just watched Anthony Davis be the best defender in a playoffs in the entire postseason.
That's true.
And I haven't seen Chet Holmgren play a playoff game yet. So I will pump my brakes there. But again, I mean, it sort of goes back to my mystery a little bit. If this is who, if Chet really is this, if this is not like hot start, then the league gets film on him and figures out, you know, as you mentioned, the Blazers just, you know, not really dealing with him on the pick and pop. Once everybody locks into him, does the efficiency drop a little bit? Yeah, maybe. But like, if that's who he is, and this is like floor and that's table stakes and we're going up from here, then yeah, I mean, in a couple of years, the age gap and just the trajectory of skill, you know, I don't know. I don't necessarily want to say it's skill, you know, like, devolution or diminishing for AD, but the jumper that unlocked so much, if that's just gone and it's not coming back, then yeah, aging gracefully as a super high impact offensive player is going to be a lot tougher for him than it would be for someone like Chet.
Yeah, it's not one of the reasons why I thought that the Lakers, I guess like my concern with him was always like the physical longevity, the durability in season. And like with LeBron playing right now is like LeBron was also on my list of like things that give me joy right now, because he's like, when I watch, I'm like the Aaron Paul meme where it's like, how does he keep getting away with this? Yeah. Except like it's positive. Like, right. I love it. I love that you're still doing this.
Tears of joy streaming down your face as you do it. Right.
Exactly. He's like, he has the highest 2-point field goal percentage of his entire career. He's still unstoppable in transition. And now he's up to 40% behind the 3-point line or something near it. Last time I checked, I don't know what happened last night that could have affected that, but it's just like, I don't know. How do you look at them as a contender unless this guy is like a verifiable MVP candidate? I'm talking about Davis, of course.
Yeah.
Is defensive player of the year, is that enough, or playing that well on that end and like hoping that the offense stays afloat with like hopefully Austin Reeves kind of reverts back to or becomes what everyone thought he would be coming into this season, and they get healthy, and you know, I guess D'Angelo Russell keeps making stupid shots, like but there's going to be a point this season when either he gets hurt or LeBron has to take nights off. Like I'm constantly skeptical of them for a lot of reasons, and Davis not being like I just remember when Rich Paul was like, I would take Anthony Davis over Giannis, and it's just like that statement has aged so poorly. And
he had a vested interest in making that statement, you know, there that's good for business for your agent to say that. Before we'll transition off this, but one is like a divine intervention is, if nothing else, a place of glass half full optimism. Mm-hmm. It is possible that when the Lakers get some more of their pieces back in, like they haven't had Jared Vanderbilt yet. Hachimura has been out, as you mentioned, Gabe Vincent. Cam Reddish, who had gotten off to a really nice start for them defensively. If AD has to do a little bit less defensively, maybe there's more, you know, energy opportunity for him on offense. It's something that my colleague Vincent Goodwill talked about with J.A. Adonde on Good Word with Goodwill. So there's a possibility that if you reduce the strain and stress on him on that end, opens up more on the other end. There's also a possibility that if, you know, rather than worrying about D'Angelo Russell continuing to make bad shots, if you were able to, say, package his contract with some other things and get a different sort of offensive player in there, maybe, you know, one who's in Chicago right now or something like that, you'd maybe have more space on the perimeter, or more, you know, another dangerous player out there that could create more space for AD, maybe let him cook a little bit more. So there could be better offensive days for Anthony Davis in, you know, ahead. But yeah, what we've seen so far, not quite as dominant as you would look for it. But we've started with some things that have been baffling to us in the early going, some brain spraining stuff from the beginning part of the season. I'd like to transition to something that would hopefully, or things we would like to get clarity on moving forward, things that would maybe untangle some of those knots in our brains. As a conceit that my friend Bill Barnwell did on his NFL show with another friend, Robert Mays, former Ringer co-worker, the idea was basically during the preseason, what do you wish you knew now about the rest of the season? Like, if you had the crystal ball and could see 6 months down the line, what would you want to know outside of, you know, who's in the finals? We get it. We would like to know that so we could bet on it, like in Back to the Future. Everybody gets that. Mine was, we touched on it a little bit. My first one was, or the main one that I had was, how many games do the Suns get with Book, KD, and Beal? So far, that is zero. And as you know, we had talked about how great Devin Booker has looked at the point. We've talked about Kevin Durant, sensational in the early going, 31-7-5 on 53-52-89 shooting. Speaking about he can't keep getting away with this. Kevin Durant just doing this every year ad infinitum is absolutely ridiculous. But we've also seen that movie every year with KD for the last several years. Like, you can't rely on him for 37 minutes a night, every night for 6 months and expect it to all. Like, that was the whole goal of the Beal deal. So, like, if you know how many minutes or how much you get of them together in the regular season, how it all looks, it would go a long way toward making me feel more comfortable about projecting them into the playoffs. But so that was one for me. What is something that you wish you had the answer to now? By the end of the season, you'll know, and you wish you knew it now.
How many games will Zion Williamson and or Kawhi Leonard play?
Like, we are sharing a brain right now, man. Zion was another one for me. All right, so go on Zion. We'll hit that now.
You know, coming into this season, he was my favorite player to watch. And mm-hmm. I think even now, I think that would still hold, to be honest with you. But there's been some games where he is just like, there's just like no answer on the planet for him. And it used to be way more like just physically, athletically. It used to be like that was basically every single night when he would play. It's less so like that now. But the fact that their offense is like bottom six or seven when he's on the court, and I know that they've had people in and out of the lineup this entire season, and Trey Murphy has not played yet. They just got Jose Alvarado back. But like they surround him with like pretty capable three-point, CJ McCollum also. They surround him with like pretty capable three-point shooters. Jordan Hawkins was like a great draft pick, it's looking like. Right. He's been really good. I really like what I've seen from him. Defensively, they've been okay, even though like Zion is Zion on that end still and hasn't really made any significant strides. But I just thought that he would be like great offense unto himself. And that has not been the case. And it's disappointing for me as just like a huge Zion fan and someone who thinks he's, when healthy, a top 15 player or capable of being a top 15 player. The two losses that they just had against, I know he didn't play in one of them, but like losing to the Jazz like twice in a row. Just like, I didn't watch that last game, but like, how? Like, I don't.
Keontae George, through Keontae George, all things are possible.
Yurt Seven is now starting at center, like, as a point of what?
Yeah,
exactly.
What a time. Yeah.
Right. Will Hardy's like upset at the effort level of his normal starters, and this is still happening. So that's really interesting, but you still drop that game. Like, I don't know. I would love for it to know, like, because Zion has also sat out several games this season when due to rest or load management or whatever. And I would just love to know, you know, is he going to be around towards the end of the year? Like, will this team be able to kind of coalesce and figure things out? And I really enjoy watching them play. I like the Dyson Daniels at point guard experiment until they get fully healthy. That's been really cool, I guess. I love him. Love Herb Jones. I think regardless of what Herb Jones does this season, he's going to be on the all defensive team on my ballot. Like, he could be terrible from this. I feel so bad leaving him off last year.
I believe this to be true. Yes. And so we're going to lock it in.
Yeah,
that in
exactly. But the Pelicans just like being so wishy-washy and Zion not being pure dominance every single time he steps on the floor has been a little disheartening. And I want to know if like he's going to be able to kind of bounce back and be the player that he was a few years ago.
Yeah. So the Pelicans 9-9 after that second, there was two losses to the Jazz, 21st on offense, 14th on defense from cleaning the glass. Yeah. My formulation on the Zion thing was, did he ever show that he fully got his burst back? Because that's kind of a lot of what you're talking about. The numbers, when I looked into this, like the top line numbers, about like 24, 6, and 5 in 32 minutes per game, really good. Assist rates up, turnover rates down, really good. But the explosiveness stuff, you could sort of see it not panning out. Share of his field goal attempts at the rim, so this is career, Rookie, 87% of his shots came there. Year two, 81. Year three, 75. This year, 64. And he's taken a career high share of his shots from floater range, like those kind of, I can't get all the way there, so I'm just going to flip it up. And he's got great touch, so sometimes he'll go in, but only about a third of the time. And so, like, that means he's shooting 55% from the floor. And for a lot of, I mean, for almost everybody in the league, you'd be like, that's sick. 55% from the floor is great. And that's like a catastrophic drop off for him, that for the way his game works, like that margin matters a ton, especially for that offense, because as you mentioned, they've had their injuries. Trey Murphy III is like a gigantic important piece for them in the floor spacing. Mm-hmm. Haven't had him at all. CJ's been out for a while, haven't had him at all. So it's a lot easier for teams to just build that wall and force him to bulldoze through it, or play, try to hit those flip shots and just not let him get to the rim. So, you know, Dyson Daniels, as you mentioned, a great defensive piece, but like, teams are not guarding him on the perimeter. He's shooting 25% from three, and they're daring him. Larry Nance Jr., not a threat really out there. And he's smart about how he moves out there. But same, you know, like we're talking about really congested, extra congested half court sets for him to have to deal with. And even like when Zion does get out in transition, it doesn't quite look, it's not hitting quite the same as it did the last couple of years. And part of that is just, you know, when does that burst come back? So if you told me in 6 months, you know, when we got to Christmas, Zion started looking like Zion full time again, and as you mentioned, like he's out there three out of every four games or most of the time, I would believe that the Pelicans got up to like the top four in the West, because we've seen them be that team when they've had that version of Zion. But it requires that version of Zion, and without him, they're middle of the pack like they've been.
He used to like not need spacing, you know, like, do you remember this? It was so amazing. Like, he would just take off, like, it was, I don't know. Like, I would just write in my notepad, like, he played with like a, like, where he took off to get to the rim was just like his launch pad was always like, it was, I don't know, 5 feet further than anyone else on average. Like, I'm just, this is all like anecdotal, but he would just take off, appear at the rim. It didn't matter if you slid like the low man over. It didn't matter if you were like doubling, if you were loading up to stop him. He would get to the basket, and or he would draw a foul. And I was not even making free throws. So like, it's like, I'm not going to say it's like decline, because this is also someone who's, I'm sure, concerned with the well-being of his body and contact and all that sort of stuff. And he's taken some really hard falls already this season where I'm just like, please get up. And he has, I guess. So that's great. But I don't know how much of this is mental. I don't know how much of this is like the out of shape stuff. I don't know. I don't know. But I the explosiveness and the ability to surround him consistently with more spacing will certainly help as he goes throughout his career, because I feel like I don't know if the days of him being a guy who could like take two dribbles, be like at the elbow, take off from 2 feet and just be at the basket, are those like over? Like, I don't know. I hope they aren't, but it's very possible.
It is very possible. It's also possible that we are running a little bit late here, so we're going to move right into a little something that we call the closing five, because Michael Pina, as a certified ball knower, you know that how you start is not as important as how you finish, and whether you start is not as important as whether you finish. That's that Manu. All right. Question number one. You recently wrote a great profile at The Ringer of Alperen Şengün from the Houston Rockets. What's the most surprising thing that you learned in reporting that out?
He can do a split anytime he wants. Just sit on the ground, do a split.
At 6'11", 250 or something like that?
Yeah. And jeez. He, like, I was talking to the people at P3 and about that and just like how abnormal it is. And they're like, yeah, no one in the NBA can do that. That's like very bizarre stuff. And I was like, does he know how weird it is? Because Alpi is like a very kid at heart, huge personality, very gregarious, very, I don't want to say immature, but just like he's a kid, very
precocious in that way.
Yes. And they're just like, they were laughing. They're like, oh, he knows that that's not usual. So he's, I really enjoyed reporting that. I really enjoyed talking to him. And I am stunned that he's as good as he is this soon. I was not expecting it when I started reporting the story.
Right. I do remember seeing a mutual friend, James Herbert, on opening night and at Barclays, and him saying like, yeah, Pina's working on a Sengun thing. And seeing that Sengun wasn't having a great game at the start. And you were like, he was like, oh man, it's going to brick for him. That's a tough look. And then as it turns out, possible all-star on like one of the most surprising teams in the league. So shows what we know on opening night. Question two, you have a young son. How many years old now?
16 months.
16 months. What is the go-to piece of children's programming in your house right now? Music, TV, movie, whatever. And how are you holding up with it?
Miss Rachel. I don't know if anyone knows what that is.
My kids are a little bit older. So this is, I think, a bit beneath
okay.
me.
So
put me up on Miss Rachel.
I guess she's like Mr. Rogers, like for the new generation or whatever generation is watching children's programming right now. But basically she just sings songs. I know all the words to all of them. I was home for Thanksgiving at my parents' house and I had to download YouTube on their Apple TV so that we could watch Miss Rachel.
Right.
Because it occupies his attention it's kind of alarming. Like
yes.
He will not sit still. He will not pay attention to basically anything for longer than 5 seconds, but he can sit in his, he has like a little chair. He can sit in his chair and watch Miss Rachel for over an hour. And wow. I don't know if that's good for the brain. Probably not. But there are some times where I need a break. And my wife's been out of town. And so we're watching a lot of Miss Rachel the past few days.
Listen. Anybody who has any judgments on that can go raise a 16-month-old and see how they feel about it. Also, there absolutely could be worse things that he could be watching. Question three, you are also a horror movie sicko, which, no thank you, the world is scary enough and they make things called comedies. You should look into them. But what is the best horror movie that you've seen recently, hopefully that you have not shown to your son?
The best horror movie that I've seen recently? Very good question.
Professional journalist.
There's so many. Like in October, I just watched like easily over 30. I would say I was like churning them out.
this is why I'm thinking about it.
I don't know. I guess I would just I'll just go old school. Like the original Scream. I've seen that movie like probably 75 times. And Dan, have you seen Scream? Come on, you've seen Scream.
I was going to say the my face there and the deep inhale that I had was because you considered old school something that came out when I was 14 years old and that I saw in the theater no fewer than like 5 times. So I just felt like I felt something creep across my grave right there. And it might actually have been you just dragging me to filth. But yes, no, of course I've seen Scream. It okay. was what we did. We were 14 years old. We had no place else to go. We went to the movie theater. It's what happened. But yes, I remember it fondly in my old age. God damn it.
Yeah. I'm blanking on any like new ones that I've seen. But I've been trying to see, I just don't have time, When Evil Lurks. Is a new one, and then I'll be firing up Black Christmas, both the sure. remake and the original, in due time before the holiday. So
yeah, you got to. I mean, it's the reason for the season. You've got to get prepared for it.
Exactly.
Question four: during last week's episode, the great Katie Heindel said one thing that she liked about Jimmy Butler is that he seems like he'd probably be a pretty good hang. You actually did hang out with Jimmy Butler a few years back for a feature story at Vice Sports. So. Michael Pina, was Jimmy Butler, in fact, a good hang? And if so, what made him so?
He was a great hang. That was probably my favorite reporting experience of my career. I don't know. It's up there. It's like top three, I would say. He was awesome. So nice. Almost like just like acting in a way that athletes do not. In terms of giving you their time, opening up, giving you their time. Literally, I'll tell like a really quick story that I've probably told before. I don't know if I've told you, Dan, but like basically the reporting, you know, there's a camera crew there at his home or a home he was renting in Malibu. And, you know, they're shooting him just kind of hanging out with his friends. And I think he was like doing a fashion shoot for no reason. And
well, you got the camera crew there. Yeah, why not?
Exactly. trying on different outfits between his like six workouts a day. And he's, you know, after that wraps up, he goes inside, he's playing domino with his buddies and super competitive dominoes player. Like one thing about him is that like when he says something, you don't know if it's a joke, which is like, and right. his friends don't either. So it's a very like, that was a little eerie, like, you know, screaming, get out of the house and people not knowing if they should actually leave the house. But after that wrapped up, he, you know, he's like, he looks at me and he's like, hey, so like we got a 45 minutes, right? You got 45 minutes for an interview. And I was like, yeah, sure. He's like, okay, come with me. So I follow him like winding through this giant mansion. And there's a home theater and he's like, let's go. Can we go in here and chat? It's like this quiet home theater. There was like a popcorn machine. He asked me if I wanted some popcorn. There were blankets. He's like, it's a little chilly in here. Do you want a blanket? I'm going to have one. And I was like, no, I'm good, whatever. And as we entered, you know, he has a publicist is there and she's like following him around everywhere. And he literally shuts the door on the publicist's face.
Wow.
And it's like, we'll see you in 45. And I was like, you are, that's truly like, that was, I had a lot of respect for that, for him in that moment. And
yeah, this if you are unfamiliar with how these sorts of negotiations work, that is rare, listener.
Extremely.
That level of time without sort of overhearing ears and peering eyes.
And the first thing that happened when we sat down was Tibbs called him because this was the off season right before he went to Minnesota.
That's right.
And Tibbs calls him and he's like, yo, like, I'll call you back, Tibbs. Like, I'm sitting here with Michael Pena. And he hangs up the phone. And I was just like, this is great. So I've even though like as someone and people who know me, I'm a pretty big Celtics fan still to this day. And he's totally ripped my throat out, ripped my heart from my body multiple times. I still like love him. I think he's just like an all time unique character in the league and obviously an unbelievable talent. And in my opinion, should go to the Hall of Fame. And yeah, that reporting experience, I guess like he's a good hang is the answer to your question. I'm babbling.
All right. So it's phenomenal. If nothing else, he certainly goes into the Good Hang Hall of Fame. And we're moving into the Divine Intervention Hall of Fame, where we're going to have to figure out where we put that in my apartment. But Jimmy shows up on basically every episode. So he's going to be an early first balloter, I think. Question number five. When are you going to give up on the Clippers?
Wow.
Whew. You see that game last night? You see how it went?
I woke up. This is what I do pretty much every morning. I go to bed at like 9:30-ish. So I don't watch the West Coast games at night. I watch them in the morning. And for Clippers games ever since the trade, because I have a lot invested, my ego does, I guess. I like.
Yeah, we should clarify. This is an emotional investment, not a tangible fiscal investment. Right. We should very, like, very clear.
Yes, that is true. I check to see the score of the Clippers game because I'm like, this might not be one of the games I'm watching today, but I have to know because I also don't want to spoil. I don't know if you're the same way. I have a really hard time watching games if I know the final score. I'll do it, but I just like it's not as pleasurable.
Yeah.
And I saw that they lost. I knew that Jokic wasn't playing. Obviously, Jamal Murray is not playing. And they lost. And I look at the box score.
No
and
Aaron
like,
Gordon either. Just you know, no
Aaron Gordon. And Reggie Jackson. Like I saw Reggie Jackson. And I was like, oh, like you know, revenge game against the Clippers. That's really cute. Like I get okay, whatever. We'll write it off. And then I saw DeAndre Jordan's like box score and the fact that Reggie Jackson threw five lobs to him. And I still haven't watched this game, but I was just like. I need to go see if every Clipper played and every Clipper did play. And it was, I'm definitely not, I haven't given up on them yet, but I do think that I will say, I do think that Russell Westbrook will not be on the team by 3, 4, or 5 months from now. Like before the playoffs, I don't think he's going to be a part of this team. He's been really frustrating to watch. And ever since they traded for Harden, it hasn't looked good. He got in like a verbal spat with a fan
yep.
after the game. Really ugly stuff. So I don't know. I still think the trade was really like a fine move. Harden has like low key look. He had a dud the other night and a win, but has been actually like okay for a guy who didn't have a preseason, didn't have a training camp. I think like just like watching him play, he'll get into his rhythm, he'll get into shape eventually, and I think he'll be pretty good. Not really worried about him, but like Kawhi hasn't looked like a superstar. Paul George obviously had a dud last night, and the Westbrook thing is just, I don't know how you fix that, because right. He had his role before the trade and they just kind of blew it up.
Yeah. So we'll check back in like a month and see where you're at with that. we head out on each episode of Divine Intervention with a weekly recommendation. Does not have to be anything basketball based. Recent examples have included going to the library and making baked ziti. So it can be anything in the world that you think is cool and good and might improve the lives of our listeners by, you know, one or two percentage points. So, Michael Pina, what do you want to recommend to the listenership?
I don't know if my recommendation will improve anyone's life, but The Curse on Showtime, a television program.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to curse everyone right now. That's what I...
Yeah, right.
Everyone
thin
listening.
Air.
It's a TV show on Paramount Plus or Showtime or whatever. Nathan Fielder, Emma Stone, Ben Safdie. It is amazing. I love it so much. Dan, are you watching it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I am familiar with it. I have not watched it.
It is very, it's just the right tone of comedy, bleak, soul-sucking, I guess drama is the word I'll use, very meta. I think the acting is just incredible. And people say like it's really uncomfortable and cringy, and that's just like right up my alley. I love it. I soak that stuff up. So The Curse is what I would recommend people. There's only been three episodes so far, but it's like one of the few shows that I'll like make time for during the NBA season. That's how good it is.
That's fantastic. And something that is only a couple episodes in, people can jump on and catch up. That's fantastic. I am going to go with The Art of Brandon Bird. Brandon Bird is a painter who kind of mashes together and recontextualizes pop culture characters. Examples include a shirtless Jerry Seinfeld wielding nunchucks, Peter Dinklage as Wolverine, Kenny G as the Doof Warrior from Mad Max Fury Road, the guy who has the guitar that shoots out the fire, but it's Kenny G with his soprano sax. A whole lot of different interpretations of Nicolas Cage and the casts of the various Law and Order shows. We have two prints of his work on our wall. One is called Lazy Sunday Afternoon, and it's Christopher Walken building a robot in his garage. And another one is called Pax Cybertronia, and it's Sam Waterston from Law and Order joining a group of kids to play with Transformers on the beach. It's weird as hell. But it makes me happy every time I see them. And like when I think about art or I think about home decor, I'm like, that seems like a pretty good. I don't have a great sense of like what is the best. But if it makes you feel something and it makes you a little bit happier when you look at it, seems like a pretty good deal. So you should go check it out. His stuff is at brandonbird.com. Might make for a good holiday gift for the Dan Devine like weirdo in your life this season. So worth checking out. If for no other reason than just to see all of the different kinds of things. I think Batman's in Law and Order in one of them. There's a lot going on. And it's a fun thing. There's an arcade cabinet of a video game for the show Coach with Craig T. Nelson. There's a lot happening there.
You had me when you said Jerry Seinfeld. Like that's
with nunchucks, that's, yeah.
Exactly. Sure. Throw the nunchucks in and we're really cooking with gas. But that's so much better than my recommendation. I feel terrible. But
not at all. Well, first off, I've had a few episodes to sort of warm up to this, but also that song I liked, that one book I read because I'm trying to read because my brain is mush. Like, what else is in my house? And I looked at that art and I was like, bang, perfect. All right. Speaking of perfect, Michael Pina, you have been a perfect guest. Where can people go and find out more of your things, follow along with you, etc.?
I guess follow me on Twitter. I don't know. Don't follow me on Twitter. Don't go on Twitter, I guess. That's what I would say. I don't know, like theringer.com. I write a fair amount.
You write an unfair amount, let's be honest.
Yeah. okay, that's you. You are the spur behind me. I will say, Dan, like you keep me young, you keep me going. So
that's good. I make everybody else feel very, very old, but that's good. All right. So yes, follow Michael on social media platforms or don't. Follow his work at theringer.com. It's fantastic and wonderful. That is going to do it for this episode of Divine Intervention. I want to thank Michael Pina for taking all this time to be with us and to reconnect with himself. Thank you to super producer John Gennaro. Gennaro.
Nailed it.
Got it. All right. I'm killing it right now. Thank you to super producer John Gennaro for doing all the things that he does to make this show look and sound great. If you've made it this far, subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you're currently listening on. Leave us a 5-star review. It helps with discoverability and growing the show. Thank you for listening. We will see you again next week. Take care of yourself. You deserve it.